Question 71. Who will commit to your trust the true riches? Luke 16:11. If therefore ye have not been faithful in the unrighteous mammon, who will commit to your trust the true riches? Be ye wise as serpents and harmless as doves. These great words of advice come from the Lord Jesus as he anticipated the experiences that his disciples would undoubtedly encounter when he sent them out two by two. He said, "I am sending you as sheep in the midst of wolves." He knew that they needed hearts, not smarts. In saying, "Be ye wise as serpents and harmless as doves," his message is that we need to handle the world in an unworldly manner. The world outside of Christ has an idea of survival too. It is to be as wise as doves and harmless as serpents. Not very wise, but deadly. Now that we are in the wolf pit and in need of his advice, we need not think that worldly wisdom will be enough. Why all this about the world and its ways? It's because this question deals with money and its value. We must keep our head above the crowd and consider money in the same light as Christ did. Here, he used it as an indicator of faithfulness where valuable things are concerned. Don't think that you're being considered to be a handler of God's true riches if you're unfaithful, slothful, and sloppy with money. However, neither does this question compel us to be financially savvy, nor does it teach frugality or austerity. Its objective is not to teach us to spend or save properly, nor is it to teach us how to take care of things. It's talking about our faithfulness and character. The question presupposes that if character is present, these other values will be forthcoming and handy. It's not a matter of spending or saving, buying or selling, earning or idleness. It's a matter of management. He could well ask, if we can't manage our own money, what major company would put their books into our care? Would a large company hire a bookkeeper that is constantly writing bad checks from his personal account due to neglect or errors in subtraction? Skill and character go hand in hand to ensure good check writing. If one assumes the bookkeeper knows how to keep good books, then it becomes a matter of his character that allows bad checks to be written. If he writes checks in earnest, thinking there is sufficient funds, his bookkeeping skills are then suspect. He is therefore either a poor bookkeeper or a man of questionable character. Both traits are detractors from a bookkeeper's character and a faithful steward's. Good character is lacking in all phases of life and commerce. A faithful man of impeccable character and talent is nearly impossible to find, as any employer in any business today would attest. But what about us Christians? If your nobility and character or your faithfulness and honesty were being judged based upon your management of money, how would you fare? If God makes his decision as to the bestowment of the true riches based upon your management of false and temporal ones, how are you doing? Is that to say that the rich are spiritually wealthy and the poor are spiritually impoverished? Not so. Again, it's not the quantity of money we're speaking of. It's the management of it. There are rich men who have so much that their mismanagement is hidden under piles of money. At large corporations, millions of dollars can be lost, stolen, mishandled, and may disappear without a trace of blame or sometimes even detection. On the contrary, it is the management of meager means that makes some rich who have very little. They do not waste or buy impulsively. They value everything on its own merit and intrinsic value, not on its price tag only. They buy what is functional, necessary, or high quality. They save part of their income, give to those in need, maintain what they have, and curb their appetites in style, excess, and superfluity. Like it or not, we who are bankrupt or impoverished due to our own mismanagement of our money are likely overdrawn, overextended, and perhaps bankrupt in other areas of our life too. We owe more than we can pay emotionally. We pay out more than we take in socially. We depend on others to make up the deficit in our misspent lives, becoming an emotional burden on those around us. Many in this condition end up on a societal or emotional welfare system, depending on others to supply them what they lack in proper relationships. They can have no friends who have needs. They may only have friends who can supply needs because they themselves are so needy. We can see from this that economic and social management are deeply intertwined, and that the appearance of a shortfall in one may well indicate an insufficiency in the other. A man or woman who can scarcely keep up with either the economic or social demands that the world places upon them will likely never be considered to occupy offices of responsibility or stewardship, nor are they candidates to become holders of what Jesus called the true riches. You have an obligation to keep and spend, hold and give, earn and save, as if God Himself is watching. For if ye have not been faithful in the unrighteous mammon, who will commit to your trust the true riches? What is unrighteous mammon? Some say it is money. Some say it is the love of money. Mammon is more than money. It's more than the desire for it. It is the way of the world. When we see billboards, magazine ads, or television commercials, we're bombarded with mammon. Madison Avenue thrives on it. Hollywood creates it. The media promotes it, and we, unfortunately, buy it. You may buy into mammon not only with your money, but also by your silent consent. When you see your child's eyes light up at its presentation and you say nothing, you don't call it the poison that it is. If you don't warn those you love that mammon is deceitful, if you don't turn your own face away, you may watch your children forsake the true riches and run after mammon, and you may eventually believe the lie yourself. At that point, you've done worse than buying mammon with your money. You've taken it into your heart and home. We all make too little effort to counter mammon's claim that the world holds all the answers. Then, after years of the world's loud indoctrination and our consenting silence, we wonder why our children seek answers elsewhere than home, faith, and God. When we look at our personal economy, how we spend our time, money, and talent, we may be amazed how much of our life is dedicated to mammon. The worldly society is constantly telling us to take their pills, to use their psychology, and to think according to their philosophy. Much of our thinking comes from our societal environment. It's an uncommon man who develops his thinking by communion with God alone. Few people fabricate a philosophy by which to live their lives from reading the Bible. At best, we may find a man who has a life philosophy made from a mixed bag of Bible stories and other good books. He appreciates both Christ and Confucius. He tempers his religion with solid modern thinking. In other words, God and mammon. It is the economy of your life, the use of your time, the expenditure of your money, and the occupation of your mind that will show you the system to which you have subscribed, the source of your philosophy, and to whom your allegiance will unmistakably fall when you're in difficulty. If you're consistently falling prostrate before the mammon of the world, seeking answers, seeking sustenance, You can't expect God to entrust his true riches to your mammon-stained fingers. For as Jesus says, you cannot serve God and mammon. Be faithful to identify mammon as mammon, as something to be avoided, as a god requiring worship and sacrifice and allegiance from any who approach with requests. The gain of true riches is in jeopardy when you bow yourself to the false riches of mammon. Being faithful in unrighteous mammon is to never consider it as anything else. And if therefore you have not been faithful in the unrighteous mammon, who will commit to your trust the true riches?